Go on.
Ready, mate?
Yes. This podcast contains plenty of personal finance chat, but that does not mean it is personalized financial advice. It comes with no guarantees and is just shared experiences. So please enjoy the show and maybe call a financial advisor for some professional help. After all, you wouldn't leave your wallet unattended for someone called Daddy.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Call Me Daddy, a podcast dedicated to elevating your game to hot dad status or big puppy energy.
Through discussing modern dad challenges that school forgot to teach us, like how to encourage your wife to breastfeed so you don't need to wake up overnight for feeds, or today's topic, easy investing.
It's a dangerous game you're playing there, John.
Why? Why is that?
Well, you're going to get in trouble, I think.
Why? Calling it easy investing or not waking up while my wife's feeding the baby. Either way,
the latter. Definitely the latter.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you know what? So we had this one night where Renee was like super tired, like reasonably so. She wasn't being a whinger. And she's like, oh, can you just help me out tonight? I was like, yeah, sure. And she's like, you sleep next to the baby because Lawson's in a bassinet next to our bed. And I was like, too easy. Not a problem. But it, like, on paper, it seemed like I was doing a really good thing. But literally all that happened is he would stir. I would wake up, pick him up, and hand him over to Renee, let her feed.
Yeah, nice.
Then she'd wake me up again, and I'd burp and put him back to sleep. It was like such a fuck around. Yeah. And it was just a good jest. But enough about my baby. What about your wife? Because you officially, told everyone on the podcast, but I can't help but feel that Brianna's Instagram's got a whole lot more followers than this podcast.
Yeah.
So how, I saw that Bri posted on her Insta. So is that?
She did.
Is that now a thing? Did you get a whole flood of love?
I got a little bit of love. Yeah. Neither of us really felt the need to post that.
Yeah, second child, who cares?
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Even bother naming them.
Well, that's going to be a problem if we have a boy, because we don't have any boy names whatsoever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, do you not agree on boy names, or do you just not have any?
We've got,
because I've got a couple. There's John and Dave. You can start with one of them. Yeah,
probably not those two.
Wait, don't insult my parents. They literally call me John David.
Well, luckily they don't listen to this, so they won't get insulted.
Yeah.
No, we've got one name that we've always agreed on, but it's pretty, don't know about it. We're not sold.
Yeah.
And then there's a few where we both are like, oh, yeah, don't mind it. But
yeah.
I don't know. Just as a guy, you went to school with so many shit blokes. So, like, it rules out so many names.
There's a lot of shit blokes out there, hey? Like, not hating, but, like, you come across some names, like, oh, better not.
Dudes just suck.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we didn't really feel a need to post anything, but I don't know. One day we took a photo of Maeve and Bri and with Bri's belly in it, and we liked it, so Bri just decided to post it.
Yeah, that's so good.
And I think it was only like last week, so we're now 22 weeks in, so it's not like it was a wait till you're 12 weeks pregnant. It was just, you know.
Man, it's crazy how quick time goes, hey? Like, because obviously we found
especially
it, like,
with a kid.
Oh, yes, because you probably didn't even think about it. Like, with us, like, when we were pregnant, and probably the same as you the first time around with Maeve, it's like you just pay attention to every little thing. How many, because we spoke about this in prior podcasts, but how many appointments have you gone to with her?
I reckon I've actually been better this time. I've gone to all the scans, which I did the first time around.
You didn't want to be a hypocrite on the podcast,
though. No, not at all. But I went to our first antenatal appointment. And I don't think I went to any of them last time.
Yeah, right.
And I think I wanted to go because we're leaning towards an elective Caesar this time.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to find out a little bit. Hey?
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, exactly. I sort of wanted to find out a little bit about them.
Yeah.
And see if we were going to like schedule in a time or anything. I was just a bit keen, but we didn't talk about any of that.
Oh, mate.
And it was the worst appointment I've ever been to by far.
Really?
Yeah. Took like 2 hours.
What? Why?
Might go into it, but it was just long.
Yeah, fair enough. Plenty to do, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
I could run you through the old Caesar thing. I did think about that as like a podcast idea because when I worked as a nurse in the operating theatre, I worked in a hospital that had a very high Caesar rate. So in order to do, because Caesars come in two types, right? we're pretty pro because we had like an elective season. Everything was like super controlled and everything went brilliantly and it was all lovely for all of us. But like you can have an emergency season, which is what people end up going to when there's, you know, fetal distress or, you know, things don't go according to plan as per a lot of pregnancies, to be honest with you. And so there's two different flavors in that sense. And whilst you're doing the same thing, one is under a completely different pretense and is so rushed and scary, but you need to be able to do that as like a clinician at any time of day or night, because I can come through the, like flying through the door. It's like the number one emergency. So you learn that. There's a first procedure you learn is what they call a scrub scout. So like that's a nurse that assists in the operating theater. As I reckon, I've done plenty of those.
Yeah, right.
I used to say to Renee, it's like, oh, when you give birth, I'll be in the pub because I've seen enough Caesars and don't need to see another one.
Didn't go down too well, I bet.
No, I didn't. So, no. Yeah. No.
Love
anyways,
it.
Had to go.
Yeah.
She dragged me along anyways.
Yeah, nice. All right. So, I guess last week we discussed money management.
Yes, we did.
And sort of how to run your household finances.
Yeah.
And today we're going to move forward a little bit from that and we're going to assume all of our listeners are managing their money very well.
Yeah, because we gave them a little bit of extra time because this podcast is coming out late as well. Yeah, so if you haven't got your budget
don't tell them, John.
If you haven't got your budget sorted now, what hope is there for you?
Yeah, you'll have a few weeks after this podcast, I'm sure, to sort it out before the next one. But we're going to move into what do you do now? So you're managing your money.
Yep.
Hopefully you've got a surplus week to week.
Yeah.
And you've got a few options of what to do with that money, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to the pub.
Yes.
Put it in the pokies.
Yeah, you could.
On the horse betting or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can invest it or save it.
Yep.
Whatever your heart desires.
Interesting you say save or invest. Do you know what I mean? So, like, because the thing is, I remember when I started this whole journey, like, my first thought, like, it gave me the ick thinking about, like, I don't want to just be one of those losers who doesn't spend money and then just puts it in the bank. And just, I was like, what does that even do? Like, and that is like, I only knew savings, do you know, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Like, but that's not necessarily what we do, which we'll get into later on in the podcast. But it is a, like an interesting differentiator between like saving and investing. They're two different things.
Yeah, of course. And like, obviously you say that's not what we do. But you need to start with.
Oh,
You need to build that buffer. Like we said a last podcast, you want to have 3 months of expenses in your account as a minimum.
Yeah.
So you definitely need to learn how to save. However, it's definitely not the best thing to do once you have that buffer. Because I don't know about you, but my bank account doesn't give me much interest on my savings.
No, and that interest, like the interest on your savings fluctuates too. So when you're paying a lot of interest on your home loans and all that kind of stuff, you generally get paid more in a savings account. But like 4%, 5%, that's pretty high kind of like return on that, whatever money you got sitting there. So there's better ways to get that. And that's where investing comes into it, isn't it? Like you're trying to find a better return for your money. Because people, I don't know if you find this annoying too, but when people say that cliche, it's like, I make my money work for me. I know like now what that actually means, but I find it really annoying because when you just say it, you're just like, what are you talking about doing?
Yeah. If you've got no idea about investing.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit of a, bit of an interesting comment, but
actually, do you know, I had a big think about this. I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead and this is because there's a couple of metaphors I want to go into for like to try and explain how I understood what investing is. But when it comes to like making my money work hard for me, you know, have you got like a car or whatever, you can rent it out to somebody, right? That car depreciates in value, right? So you don't necessarily want to, say your personal home car or whatever, you rent it out. You don't really want to do that because they might spew in it or crash it or something like that. And then, you know, you lose a bunch of money. But if they didn't do that, they'd be paying you, you use your car and then you get it back and you just got money because they needed your car, right? Money, you can rent money out. I didn't mention this to you before in the podcast planning or whatever, but like investing is almost like renting money out because like once you have it, it's the same thing as like having a car or whatever, just having a bit of money. You give it away, let people use it, but they have to give it back to you plus more money because you let them do that.
Yeah.
And that's like another way. So should we actually just start with like what is investing?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Because I've now opened that can of worms. It's not following our run sheet, but
no, that's all good. Yeah. So I guess what's your definition of investing?
oh man, I don't even know if I've like set a thing there. Do you know what? This, I'm going to jump it straight back to the run sheet, because what we were going to talk about is something called like an asset versus a liability.
Yep.
Okay, because investing is inherently taking like money that you have, converting it from cash into something else, like a house, like a car.
Into an asset.
Into an asset.
I think that's nearly the definition of investing, is using cash and buying an asset.
Yeah.
Because what is an asset?
Well, okay, but this is the thing, right? Because when most people will think an asset is just an item that they own that is worth money, and in like in a very rudimentary way, like that's probably true, right? Because like I had a drum kit, which I sold and used that money for something, or my project car, John Velvet shared on YouTube. Thanks. But the project car that I used when I did that little YouTube thing, I was working on it for a while and I sold it, for like $8,000 or something like that. And you could imagine that that would have been an asset because I bought that car for $2,000.
Nice.
Except I probably would have spent $20,000 working on it.
Of course.
So that's not actually an asset.
Yeah.
Right? It was a thing that it had value, but it's not an asset. And the reason it's not an asset is because the money I spent on it didn't equate to the money it returned to me.
Yeah.
Right? So the asset versus the liability, right? An asset being something that brings in money, like simply brings in money, and a liability is something that costs you money.
Correct.
Like,
yeah, and I think a bank's probably going to look at anything you own as an asset, even if it doesn't generate money for you. However, when you're looking at investing, an asset is definitely something that needs to generate money.
Yeah, and I think the reason they do that is because the bank's looking for collateral.
Correct.
Like if they have to go, like if you default or whatever, can't pay them back on whatever thing you've done, they need to know that they can collect things off you to
They'll look at your car as an asset because it's worth money.
Yes, yeah.
But you wouldn't say buying a car is investing unless it's a classic car.
Yeah.
Potentially it is.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the car was like old, not a classic.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you know what's really interesting too? Because I remember when I was going through the whole home buying thing, and maybe we should do a podcast on that eventually too, because they're like, you know, who guides you through that? Just the banks, and that's trouble. But I remember when they were doing an asset list for me, looking at everything, and they were putting down these false assets like my car and my drum kit and my guitars and all sorts of rubbish. And then I was like, oh, yeah, and I've got this credit card too. And this credit card, like, has got, like, $1,000 limit. I just had this, like, small one. And they're like, oh, that's a liability. And I was like, how can it be a liability? It's free money. And, like, what was that? Like, what I didn't realize is that even though I had access to that money, it wasn't my money.
No.
So it was debt. They looked at it as debt to me because of my expenses. I would have had to pay it back.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyways, do you want to just sum up asset versus liability in the simplest term? Because I rambled a bit there.
No, really simply, an asset is something that you buy that will generate cash flow for you. And a liability is something that's going to cost you money. So I think let's quickly run through some typical assets and liabilities. So liabilities are probably the easiest one.
My wife.
It's probably the easiest one to understand. So your wife, because she costs you a lot of money because she shops.
No. Oh, doesn't she? Your wife. Is your wife a liability too?
Oh, not the as old... big of a liability, I don't think.
The old, I need a coffee.
Yeah, but typical liabilities are things like cars. Even if you don't get a loan, because it's a depreciating asset.
Yes,
we're using the word asset, but it's going down in price, right? And it's not generating any cash flow for you. It costs you things for servicing, buying fuel, etc. So that's a typical liability.
Yeah.
Other things are any sort of consumer item. Obviously, they're not going to generate you any money, right? Yes. So
what's an example of a consumer item?
Clothes, shoes, guitars, drum sets.
I mean, I'd argue my 1965 Gibson will give me money eventually.
Yeah, 100%.
But for the most part, the two dog shit guitars I have hanging up in this room, they're not going to bring me back any money. But it's
so
great point.
Moving into assets. These are things that you can invest in, and everyone knows about it. It's property or real estate.
Yes.
That is an investment property, not your home, and we'll go into that very shortly.
Yeah.
Shares, bonds, things of that nature are also assets, and we'll explain why very shortly as well. So, but I think we should jump into why your home is not an asset and yeah. why we might disagree on that.
Okay. So this is a discussion, from my opinion, that comes from like America, and there are like different laws and stuff around this. So like America's got like laws that if you have a loan on a house, your resident, like principal place of residence where you live, you, it's a tax write-off, the interest to a certain degree, which sounds good until you find out kind of why they do all that kind of stuff. We don't have that here in Australia. And so if the definition for an asset is something that puts money in your pocket, my house that I live in doesn't put money in my pocket. I pay an inordinate amount of money these days in particular on my mortgage. I have to pay for upkeep. And interestingly enough, right, even if I paid my house off completely, I would still have to pay rates.
Yeah, rates, right? Maintenance.
Yeah, so even if I had paid everything, so maintenance and then there's rates, and like you'd think that once you've paid it off, like logic would tell you, you now own that thing, but no, there's still rates to be paid and yeah, obviously water and like electricity and all those kind of things. So it is both, in my opinion, a asset and a liability.
Yeah.
It is just dependent on what you do with it, right?
Correct.
So if you buy, because I can't wait to talk about this with you, because I am so, I'm really impressed with what you like have done and all that kind of stuff. But at the same rate, like I want to argue with you, but I don't want to like make you second guess what you've
done.
I
won't second guess.
Kind of wrap my head
around. Don't worry. I've got
the rebut.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. It does depend.
Yeah.
But I definitely view my principal place of residence as an asset.
Yeah.
100%.
And to be honest with you, I do too.
Yeah. I think it's different in Australia, right? Like anyone in America listening to us now is probably going to go, oh, but real estate's so up and down.
Yeah.
Look what happened in the GFC.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada.
Oh, by the way, you should watch The Big Short. If you don't know what the GFC is, watch The Big Short. It's such a good movie and it does a pretty good job explaining
it.
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah.
In Australia, real estate is a lot more stable.
Yes.
Residential real estate near a CBD, a lot more stable, right?
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily speculating that the price is going to go up.
Yes.
Yes, they could go down in years, but long term, they are 100% going to go up because we run out of land. So land becomes more valuable near important areas like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, etc. Yes.
So
in my eyes, it's 100% an asset, even though it's not giving me cash right now.
Yeah.
It is going up in value, therefore I see it as an asset.
And we just have to preface, like, that is your opinion.
Correct.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't want people to go like, oh, Dave on that daddy podcast said, let's buy houses. Look, because this is, there are tax benefits to having an investment property as
correct.
Well.
Yeah.
Which make it a bit more lucrative to do. But at the end of it, so for me in this point in my life, because the other thing, like bringing it back to being a dad too, it's very, I don't know how you're feeling at the moment, but having a wife at home who isn't working because she's looking after the kid and you're like, so you've taken a financial hit from the income side of your balance sheet or whatever. And then having to spend more money out of your, like making the commitment to do that. And like, don't get me wrong, like I think you should pay yourself first. And if that's what you're doing with your house and you're putting money into your house, then that's good. And maybe it's like a fear thing because like I find that quite frightful. Do you know what I mean? Like knowing that I have another mortgage payment, that I potentially could have another mortgage payment if I did buy another house.
Yeah. And you're sort of touching on what I just want to finish up with here. And the reason why I see my home as an investment is because if it goes up in value, you can use that equity that you've made to then
do
invest
more in
something else, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I see it as an asset. It's not an asset until you do that.
Yeah.
Because it can't generate you money. Unless you decide to sell it, it physically can't. But I understand what you mean. Like kids cost so much money and I'm definitely experiencing that now because we've moved Maeve into daycare for 3 days a week instead of two.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned it already on this podcast. It cost me $8,500 a year for daycare. And we're about to double that because we're about to have a second kid.
Oh,
right.
Man.
So $17,000 a year in daycare is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right. And then like obviously you've got plenty of other expenses like nappies, wipes, food, etc.
I was thinking about this.
It's crazy.
Do you think by the time your kids go to primary school, you're going to suddenly find yourself with like essentially an $8,000 pay rise? Because you're not going to be paying...
For a short period, yes.
Yeah.
Like I think we're going to send Maeve to private school.
Yeah.
Ooh
la la.
Like yeah, that's a lot cheaper than like secondary school, private school. Primary school is like...
Oh, yeah. For a basic private
school, it's bugger all money. It's a lot cheaper than daycare.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we will, once Maeve and second bub finish daycare, we will have a bit more excess cash. But yeah, that won't last long because as soon as they're in secondary school, that's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said this last week, but like in my sort of plan, that's the one big thing I'm planning for. Like, because when your baby's born, you've got like 10, 11 years to get in there and start like doing the good work and putting money away for when they go to high school. But look, to be honest with you too, the other thing is like we also do have a friend of mine that I work with said this to me. He's like, you live in Australia, so like you're very much in like the upper echelon of privilege.
Yeah, you know, comparatively. You've won the lottery by living here.
Yeah, 100%. And like I think it's good that you recognize that. And like I know we're talking about you know whatever schools we want our kids to go to, good schools, and it is an important thing to think about. And you definitely want to set your kids up for the future. But even if you sent your kids to a public school, they're still going to get a pretty good education and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely not advocating for private schools over public schools.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are both going to provide very similar education.
Yeah.
I just have my other reasons for wanting to send to private school.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's fair enough. So I guess like clarifying too, so like we've basically kind of been talking about what an asset is and we've sort of like broached the topic of what you use your surplus money, what asset you put your surplus money into,
yeah,
which essentially ends up being investing.
Yeah.
And so do you want to actually just tell people very clearly what it is that you do?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I invest in both shares and property.
Yeah.
I've invested in shares since 2017. And then I bought my first investment property last year. However, nice.
Congratulations.
Thank you, mate. Even before buying that investment property, property was always going to be my number one investing vehicle.
Yeah.
And obviously, your strategy is always changing. Mm-hmm. And I was always going to be, I'm going to buy as many investment properties as I can. But now I've sort of swayed to looking at shares as the major vehicle long term.
Yeah.
And we can go into that later. But yeah, so sort of a mixture, but right now my strategy is heavily in property.
Yeah.
For reasons I'm more than happy to discuss. I don't know if you want to get into that detail right now.
Look, we might come back to it at the end of the podcast because like it makes no sense until we like talk about what the other strategies is.
Yeah.
So, so what we looked at is what an asset is versus liability. So we're looking for things that put money in your pocket.
Yep.
And the confusing thing about that is that your house right now, that your investment property, isn't putting any money in your pocket.
No, it's taking money away.
It's taking money away, yep. Which is, and this is one of the reasons that we'll talk about it later, that like it's only going to be beneficial when you sell, when the house price goes up. But there are ways to think about this.
Strongly disagree with that.
What do you mean?
Because it will generate cash flow in X amount of years.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
Right now, it's costing me money. Long term, it definitely will not cost me money.
Okay. Yeah, good point. Yep. All right. That gets a bit technical, so we'll leave it there, but good point.
Yep.
And for the people who know what you're talking about, he got me.
but let's touch on your investing philosophy, I guess. So what are you doing now and give a short reason why?
So similar to you, my main vehicle is in just straight up shares, but investments of that kind. But rather than at this point in time going into residential investment, like property investing or anything like that, I'm actually kind of more interested in investing in business.
Yep.
Because just like, you know, a house can be an asset or shares can be an asset. A business is a money-making venture. That's at least a good one, and you wouldn't buy a bad one. But I find business systems really interesting and like how to improve all that kind of stuff. So, and I'm very much like, this is my initial foray into that. So I play around with that stuff a little bit. So like I'm trying to get things off the ground. And
when when you say business, you mean starting a business, not investing in shares within a business.
Oh, great point. Yep. So what I at the moment it's like starting a business. I've done like all sorts of like bits and bobs. And funnily enough, man, like I've said this to you before. I was kind of onto this stuff years ago. So like when I was 18, I played in a band and toured around playing shows and stuff like that. And like, yes, it's like it's not really an asset because you're drunk all the time. but it's the creation of something that doesn't exist before you come up with it, i.e. a song, and then you play that song, record that song, and then you've made an item for distribution. And even now, I still make about $15 a year off the albums I've got on Spotify. John Cole or Amber Rain, if you ever want to listen to those, good luck. But they're assets. They're almost like a business, and a business does the same thing, right? So like one of the things that I'm looking at the moment is I'd love to buy a driving range.
Yeah, like nice.
Golf drive. And I was like, how good would it be to like run a driving range and try and, you know, manage costs and all that kind of stuff and, you know, get people enthused to go hit golf balls.
There's actually an entire golf course for sale up in the sunny coast if you're interested.
Yeah, I know, I saw that, but
just
that's
a cool
like
12 mil.
Yeah, I know. And like golf courses as well. Can you imagine how much lawn you'd have to mow?
Oh yeah.
Even for somebody
you
who
love
likes
mowing lawn.
Well, this is the point, right? So like business is a whole other venture, but I don't do that yet per se, but I, at the moment,
you're very interested in it.
Yeah, I'm super interested in it. I'm like studying it, if you will. Not like a formal sense, but just like, you know, learning and all that.
So let's quickly define what a share is, because we've mentioned it numerous times, but we haven't really explained it.
Yeah. Can I use my metaphor?
Use your metaphor. Go on.
Instead of buying a property like you have, it's like buying many tiny properties because they behave the same way. So what you're actually doing is you're buying a small piece of a business,
yep.
Okay, of a public business. So these big, big businesses, let's call it, I don't know, the biggest bank in your country or whatever. And you can buy a piece of that and that makes you an owner of it. And that's brilliant because that little piece behaves the same way a house would behave if you bought it, right? So it over time, the price of the house or the share will go up, and that's known as capital gains. And so if you sold it, you would have made money out of it that way. But apart from that is you get rent along the way. So in a house, it's obviously rent, but in a share, you get something called dividends. And so when the company is profitable, so that company is making money, you are an owner of that property, business, sorry. And so you are entitled to a small amount of the profit. And I say entitled, the laws are like they differ everywhere because there are some companies that don't even give dividends.
Yeah, the business actually can decide what they want to do with their profit.
Yeah.
So they might decide to reinvest it within the business to grow it even more.
Yeah.
Or they might decide to distribute the profits in a dividend to their owners.
Yeah. And theoretically, both are beneficial to you too. But, you know, I quite like it when I get paid. So, like, I don't know if you like, because it's relatively like, because I'm new to this, right? So, I only started investing like this year. I did sort of like punch a bunch of like spare cash into it. So, like, it's interesting to see how it sort of behaves. But when I get my dividends, they're like, they're pittance. So, like, you get like a dollar per share that, you know, you've got and stuff like that. And you're like,
Yeah, and I think like dividends are awesome.
Yeah.
But it depends on the business. Like if the business is super big and they're not growing anymore, I guess, sure, give me as many dividends as possible.
Yeah.
But if there's something like Apple 5-10 years ago,
yeah,
don't give me a dividend.
Yeah.
Reinvest it because you're growing exponentially. Just keep going because you're making me heaps of money. And as you said, you make a capital gain from that once you start to sell.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. And so the interesting thing about this is like just across like the stock markets, because that's where they trade these shares, right? It's like a shop where you go to buy these shares. On average, the top sort of like 200, they generally like if the market, the whole thing, sort of, you get 12% gains as opposed to like, you know, 5% that you get in your savings when you put money into the bank. And that's why we chase these things, because like that, you get more money for having it there. Ergo, why people say, I like to have my money work for me.
Yeah.
Because as I said earlier, it's like you're renting that money out to somebody and they, you know, have to pay you back or whatever, plus some for the, you know, joy of renting your money.
So where did you pull that 12% from?
Oh,
what do you mean by that?
Chat. I pulled it from chat. If you like. So I don't know how to explain
if,
this.
If you look at the share market, right?
Yes.
From its inception to now.
Yes.
On average, if you look at the rate that businesses have grown and you reinvest all those dividends back into the business.
Yes.
You would roughly get 12-ish.
Yes.
I think it's between like 8 and 12%.
Yes.
Would be your compounding profit.
Yeah. And this is why it's a difficult question because it gets deep quick. But essentially.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, some years you're going to have good years, some years you're going to have real bad years.
Yeah. And that's where I wanted to go with it is don't just like, we can say, oh, you'll make an average of 10-ish% if you're investing in the share market. But of course, there's huge risks, right? So there's going to be years where you could lose everything. If you invest in the wrong business, you could literally, it could go bankrupt and you lose it all, right?
Yeah.
So definitely don't just believe us that, yep, I'm going to chuck my money in the share market and I'll make 10%.
Yeah, because like if it was that easy, everybody would do it.
Correct.
Like you have to learn and sort of like be a bit more sophisticated about it as you go along. And this is probably a great place to start thinking about it. Because there's things that I wish people told me earlier. So in Australia, we've got something called superannuation plans, which is like a forced investing for your retirement to ease, theoretically, there's differing opinions on this from economists. There's an Australian economist, Cameron Murray, who's got very interesting opinions on this, which I subscribe to. And I can put a link to a podcast that he's in when he talks about it. But essentially, they say that the superannuation is your nest egg for when you retire. That then pays you. So then the government's pension scheme doesn't have to pay you. And if you actually, because we don't bother looking at that, or I didn't bother looking at that for ages. I just went with it because I didn't really understand it. I just knew I was being forced to save money. So a portion of the money of my, you know, income, monthly income or weekly income would go into this, you know, thing. And I'd just forget about it. And then you look at it one day and you're like, oh, I actually got something there. But that money is put in shares, right? It's managed by whoever the superannuation company is.
Yeah.
And then they put it into, it doesn't have to be shares. They put it into asset classes. So we spoke about like the different types of assets.
Yeah.
They don't go and buy a bunch of cars, but they can buy shares. They can put it in property. They can put it in something called bonds.
Yeah.
They can put it in like gold if you wanted to, and silver, cash, they can do it in that as well, and do all this. There's different ways of doing that, but anyways, and I wish somebody just sat me down and explained to me what they're doing, because with the superannuation laws, we can't access until a certain age, like a preservation age, which is 65 I think at the point, or maybe
I think by the time we retire it'll be, well, like 67, but that's probably going to be even higher by then.
Be 607.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so there are ways that you're going to invest in shares, which is very similar to that, but without any of these rules. Like, you can put in what you want, you can take it out when you want, and that's it. That's how I ended
plus
up.
Plus a lot less fees.
Yeah, and a lot less fees. Mm. And that's how I sort of got the bravery to start doing it. Cause like I found like putting some money in, I was scared to do it. Putting some money in originally got me to actually be a bit more enthused about it. Like once you had a bit of skin in the game.
Yeah.
And start small. I do recommend that to people. Like if you can afford it, 100%. Like put some money in and then just watch it. And even if you do lose it or whatever, just learn about it.
Yeah.
Because you're investing in your own knowledge then. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
100%. And yeah. I can only echo what you just said. If you're interested in this sort of stuff, literally just whatever cash you have, put it into the share market, and then you will become infinitely more invested in it.
And for me, I don't know if you found this, but then because it's hard to convey this, but it became fun. Yeah. And like I bet you, like there'll be people listening, be like, oh yeah, the sound is boring as hell. And like I honestly felt like that as well at some point. And then when I put some skin in the game, and I was like, oh. All of this became fun. Like I remember talking last week about last month about the balance sheet that like at home when you do your budget and then you have a look at like where you're pissing your money away. and that it felt really awful. But then, like, it becomes a game, and you're like, how much money can I save?
Yeah, this, big time. Yeah. Yeah.
It honestly becomes really fun.
Yeah.
It becomes really fun, and, like, the whole investing kind of thing becomes really fun too. And do you know what I want to talk about in this too? There are sayings and stuff out there that can, like, mislead you quite a bit. And some of those sayings can be property doubles every 7 to 10 years, or it can be you're going to get 12% out of your, you know, whatever.
Yeah, correct.
But at the same rate, like, this concept of money doesn't buy happiness. Did you ever come across, because a lot of people used to say that, they're like, you know, can you talk about your career and stuff when you're like, yeah, I want to earn lots of money. People go, money doesn't buy happiness.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, because, like, you need to find some form of, like, inner sanctity.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But what it does buy is a reduction of a very large amount of stress. Like, if I'm honest with you, mate, like, and I'm very lucky. Everybody has, you know, different lives and stuff, and the ebbs and flows in life change. I haven't always been like this. But at this point in time, I don't really have any stress except for money stress.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, it would be great to just not have to worry about that. And
100%.
Yeah. And even so we spoke about the 3 months of keeping, like, of 3 months of expenses or whatever. Yep. That's a big stress relief, because, like, if, you know, your boss wasn't nice or whatever and you didn't like your job anymore, you can go, like, oh, well.
Catch you later.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you can go do something. So, like, I just think, like, I don't like it when people say, like, money doesn't buy happiness anymore. Like, I get what they're trying to say.
Yeah, you get what they're trying to say. And I know there's, like, research out there saying if you're earning over, I think it's like $80,000 a year, money, like, any more money cannot help you be happier. But, like, yeah, that's bullshit. Honestly, that's absolute bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, like, admittedly, I think that was all pre-COVID data.
Yeah. So, 'cause he lives, mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so I do think those numbers have shifted drastically now.
Oh, 100%. Plus, like, everyone's expenses are different. So, yeah, for you, maybe 80 grand's all you need. But yeah, for me, with a kid in childcare, cost me,
yeah,
soon to be 17 grand. Like,
yeah,
I need a little bit more.
Yeah, man.
Plus, I also feel like it gives you more time and freedom. Like, we've said it before, neither of us love our jobs. We don't hate it, but we don't love it. Yeah. So, if I was a millionaire and I could choose what to do with my time and chase passion projects that I don't need to worry about how much they're gonna to earn me money, then I'll be much happier. 100%.
Yeah, because I think to a certain degree, like, jobs end up being like a means to an end. Like, even because like I'm passionate about my job and I like my job and I like doing a good job.
Yeah,
but, you know, as you say, like, if I liked
it, if you didn't need money, you wouldn't be there.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah. So.
Yeah.
I can say that because I don't think my boss listens to this. So.
I don't think any boss is going to worry about that.
No, because
they know why you're there.
Yeah, and yeah, I know, and that's the thing. There's some,
because, like, they're there for the same reason.
Yeah, I know. It's funny too, because, like, you know, it's worthwhile for people to actually have a think about, like, what their motivations are for why they work. Because I came from nursing, man, and, like, nursing's got, like, when I did that, like, I was, like, really passionate about it, and, like, I'm glad I was. But it burnt me out. Do you know what I mean?
I can only imagine.
Yeah. And because I was so passionate, like, it, you know, when things don't go the way you want or you have a patient that dies or whatever, like, it hits you way harder than, like, if you could just be a bit more blasé about it. So it's like a bit of a double-edged sword there.
Yeah,
it
definitely
ends up, burning you out, and I end up leaving because of it. So then what does that help? So that's an interesting one. So, like, I think also too in that circumstance, because that I was living, like, paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Like, this is another thing to realize too, like, that whole sort of, like, the money in versus money out if you're not saving. And, like, I'm not casting aspersions on anyone here because, once again, situations change and all that kind of stuff. And I've been in all camps that you can imagine. I've had higher expenses than income.
Yeah.
Very much so. Not even that long ago or whatever. But it's, yeah, I don't think I could ever go back to that. It freaks me out now.
Oh, big time.
It freaks me out big time.
So I guess we've talked about you're more aligned with shares and running businesses. Yeah. I'm more aligned with property at the moment. We both are obviously interested in both, but I guess it's probably worthwhile quickly going through pros and cons of both.
Yeah.
And why we've chosen those. So let's start with shares. And and let's tell the audience there's a lot more investing vehicles out there that you can choose. like property and shares aren't it.
Yeah.
However, they're the two biggest ones.
Yeah, and in even inside both of those, property and shares, there are like subsets. You could do commercial property and residential property.
Yeah.
They're two different ball games,
yeah.
right? Or you could do like managed funds where you give your money to people and they play with it to make it work for you. Or you can do ETFs,
yeah.
which is like an electronic version of that
yeah.
in a nutshell way.
Yeah.
Or you could just do individual stock picks. They're all different ways of doing
yeah.
it. So when
heaps
you decide,
of different investing strategies to
yeah.
choose from. And it's actually really overwhelming when you have no idea about any of them.
Yeah.
But we're going to touch a bit later on different resources of where you can sort of get information for each strategy. So
yeah, more credible information than just
much
us.
More credible.
Yeah.
so let's start with shares. Why? Yeah. What are the pros of investing in shares?
Well, you don't need money, like you don't need much money to get into it.
Yep.
Like, I don't know about you, but my stockbroking app just says for my buy in the minimum spends $500.
Yep.
So if you've got $500 lying around, you can get started.
And there's micro investing apps now where
yeah.
literally like a couple bucks to invest.
I mean, which is good too. Like, what's the benefit in that? Just because if you don't have $500 on you.
Yeah, I think so. Like there's apps that'll round up your spends and
yeah.
they'll invest that into shares for you.
Oh, so like when you buy like
a coffee, yeah, okay. coffee for $5.50, it'll round it up to $6 and it'll invest 50 cents for you. Things like that.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah. So little apps like that are
yeah.
also a pro because yeah, like not everyone has $500 to chuck in the share market.
Yeah, you got a point. Yeah. And I should look into that. It's like maybe not a bad idea because anything you put away is only going to be beneficial for you. But anyways, sorry. You said what's the benefit of it? So you don't need a lot of money to get into it. The other thing is it's not that hard provided your value is still there in the share that you've bought. It's not that hard to get your money back. So what I mean by that is like, say for instance, like, I don't know, you end up, something horrible happens, like a tree falls on your house and you need to get your money quickly.
Yeah.
The fee to withdraw your money from your shares is like, for me, in my system, is like $9 and I can basically pull all my money back out.
Yeah.
If it's still there, like whatever the value is at that point in time.
Yeah.
Look, to be honest with you, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Right? And it that's called liquidity, right? So it costs
yeah.
you $9 to get your cash out and you'll pretty much have it within 2 days.
Yes.
So shares are very liquid and what that means is essentially you can sell your asset and get cash very quickly.
Yes.
So that is a benefit of shares, but it's also
yeah.
a con. And
yeah.
the reason why it's a con is because it adds volatility to the market. And what volatility is it's when prices move up and down
yeah.
quite quickly. And
like in the same way after COVID happened, like the house prices went up and like up hugely. That was like a jump and the drastic change, if that were to happen all the time going up and down.
Correct. Yeah. And like the share market, when COVID happened, it crashed.
Yes.
And the reason why it can crash so quickly is because people can get out quickly. So
yes.
as soon as fear sets in, it crashes. Or as soon as greed sets in, it spikes really quickly.
Yeah.
So it can also be a con. But you're right, it is a pro because if you need your money, you can get it.
Okay, I see what you mean. I didn't understand what you meant when you start. And so just so I can rephrase just in case other people think weirdly like me, you were basically saying that like when the value of the share that you've bought drops drastically, so like in the same way that when the value of a house that you've bought drops drastically, you could technically sell your house because you're fearful your house's value will become nothing. Right. And that's what people do in the stock market. So when things go down, they go, oh, the value of my share has dropped. But this is one thing I wish people told me too. You're not losing, like you are losing money, you're losing value, but you're not losing share numbers unless that it, like the whole thing disappears.
No. The value of each share has gone down.
Yes. Which means it leaves the opportunity for the value of those shares to go up. And because you're investing in a business, the business's job to stay alive and continue making everybody money,
yeah,
right, is everybody's invested in trying to make that the share price go up in the end.
Yeah.
So if you don't sell it at the bottom,
correct,
yeah, you're more than likely going to be okay. Like there are bum choices that you can make and stuff like that.
Yeah,
just,
correct.
You shouldn't panic.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't sell at the bottom. Just like if your house, like
it's the worst thing you can do is selling when everyone else is selling.
Yeah. And it's the same with like a house, right? Like if my house halved in price tomorrow, I wouldn't be like, oh, I better get rid of it before I lose all my money that I've got in it.
No.
You'd
no.
never do that.
It's called a paper loss. It's not,
yeah.
you don't solidify that loss until you sell. So But yeah, that is a con of liquidity because fear sets in really quick. So if one person sells, another person can sell, and all these people can sell at all the same time.
Yeah.
And there's it's simple supply and demand. So if you've got more people wanting to sell than buy, the price goes down.
It gets pretty meta very quickly, doesn't it? Like very conceptual and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think like, you know, as you say, if you do just put money in it, you'll start to get it. And
yeah. I think the major pro of shares is the gains that you can make from shares are better than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Apart from your running your own business.
Yes.
Because you could have invested in Amazon 10 years ago and you'll be very, very rich right now.
Yeah. Or the one that makes my butt pucker every time I hear people say it, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down this because like Bitcoin is also an asset class. And I cringe about Bitcoin and everybody can have their own opinion about it. It's just, it's not for me yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, you know, there are some people that bought Bitcoin when it was just a thing and then there was a big hype about it because the demand for it went up so greatly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, funny enough, like, you know, to conceptualize this, diamonds, they're a great example too. Diamonds are an asset. Right. Well, it can be an asset where you pay money for them and they can increase in price if it's like a rare, you know, very clear one or whatever. And then,
yeah, of course,
a bunch, you know, for whatever reason, they become a popular one. Like everyone's a champagne diamond or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They don't want to tell us that. I'm assuming most people listening here are blokes. What would they know about a champagne diamond? I just happen to buy that for my wife on her wedding ring. So yeah, I know what that is.
Love
it,
it.
Yeah. Anyways, I guess what, like, I keep doing this, but I guess what I'm trying to convey is that they're like the concepts people already know. Like, if they're roughly our age, they would have gone through this stuff before.
100%. Yeah, definitely.
And just maybe not like put two and two together.
Yeah.
And make it a little bit less scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Cons of shares, I don't think there's too many. It's just there is a risk of the business going to zero if you are investing in.
Yeah,
in a single business and the volatility, as I've already mentioned.
And that's it.
And what you're doing, people.
Yeah, you're giving people money to try and make money, but they got to take a risk to in order to do that.
Correct.
Like a great example is like, let's make it really simple. You sell, I don't know, photo frames. I'll some photo frame here. If somebody just said that to you, that's a pretty like rubbish idea. There's like, you know, and they try and sell photo frames, but then get them from Temu from like for $2.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That photo frame business dies. And you go like, wow, we gave you $200 to do that. Like, give me my money back. And well, like, sorry, mate.
Even like something like Apple, right?
Yeah.
Everyone would go, oh, I'll invest in Apple. It's pretty safe.
Yeah.
But like, I guess before the iPhone, everyone loved Nokia and BlackBerry and whatnot.
Yeah.
Where are they now?
People were like, oh, yeah, let's invest in BlackBerry because like they're the way of the future. And then Apple comes
steamrolling. Like, there's always disruptions to industries. So nothing is risk-free.
Yeah.
Absolutely no business.
Do you know what's really interesting about this? What I've enjoyed about this journey too is like I stopped watching the news a long time ago because I don't like the news. There's a lot of like, you know,
noise.
BS, noise and crap there. And like, you know, a lot of opinionated stuff. There's always like a political agenda and all that. And so I was just like, I don't need to see this. Like, I'll find out very quickly if something major 100%, happened.
I'm the exact same.
Yeah. And so what the whole sort of like following shares and stuff has done is like given me an avenue to learn about the world without the like BS crap that comes from like watching the news. Do you find that as well? Like you, because like I still use news sources, like, you know, certain like business related ones, but I get like a cleaner variant of the news now.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
It's good.
All right. Let's move into property.
Oh yeah. So pros and cons of property.
Yeah.
Right. Let's start. Do you want to start with the most glaring pro?
Sure.
Yeah. What made you choose to do to buy that house?
Leverage.
Okay. And can you explain, because leverage is a word, a very
it's
good
a,
word. It's
I'll,
part
I'll
of
bros,
the nomenclature
I'll
of this shit.
I'll bro-splain it for you.
Yeah, bro-splain it. Mansplain.
So leveraging into an asset is essentially borrowing money to obtain that asset, right? So think of a lever. You might only spend $100,000 and then of your own cash, and then you get a $400,000 loan, let's say, and you now own a $500,000 asset.
Yes.
So that's what leverage is. So,
and why is that so good?
That's so good because your asset might go up on average, let's say property goes up 7% a year.
Yeah.
Right? So it's less than shares. So that's the con of property if you're going to compare it to shares, right? On average, it's not going to go up as much as shares.
Yeah.
However, that's 7% of a $500,000 asset. where I've only invested $100,000. So 7% of 500,000. Oh, geez. What's that? $35,000, right?
Yes.
Is that right?
And then that is your money, isn't it? Like, because so, your debt remains the same when you do that, right? So the correct. Money, the money that is leveraged. So you've
yep.
you've put a deposit down. You're given all this money, which yep. is the levered money.
So this is called cash on cash returns, right?
Yeah.
So right. I've spent $100,000 in cash, but because I've leveraged to a $500,000 property, my cash on cash return is actually 35%.
Yeah.
Because I've spent $100,000, but I've made $35,000. Obviously, you're not selling the property.
Yes.
So you haven't made anything.
Yeah.
So it's all a paper gain.
Yeah.
Or a paper loss if it goes down.
Yeah.
But that's the main pro
yeah.
of property. So let's say you've got $100,000 in shares.
Yeah.
You got $100,000. You can either go into property or shares.
Yeah.
You put it into shares that go up 10%, let's say.
Yeah.
Your $100,000 goes up $10,000.
Yes.
So now you have $110,000.
Yes.
My property.
Yeah.
It's worth $500,000, goes up 7%, so
yep.
less than shares.
Yes.
But it goes up $35,000. Yeah. So we've spent the same amount of cash.
Yeah.
However, mine's gone up over or 3.5 times more
yep.
than shares. Obviously, there's expense.
Yep.
You've taken out a loan, so now you need to repay that loan. You're repaying interest.
Yes.
But you're also receiving rent.
Yeah.
Which is going to offset some of that.
Yeah.
But the main thing about leverage.
Yeah.
Is the compound interest that you get. And I don't want to go into compound too much, but I think most people understand the concept of compound.
Yeah.
If not, just Google it because yeah. it's Warren Buffett says this. It's the eighth wonder of the world. It's
That wasn't Warren Buffett, or he may have said that, but that was Albert Einstein actually.
Oh, Albert Einstein, yeah, of course. Yeah. Pretty much the same guy, right?
Yeah.
both geniuses.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah,
sorry, Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
So now your asset, let's say you've spent $100,000 in shares, is yep. worth $110,000.
Yes.
Mine's $535,000.
Yeah.
The next year, let's just say yours goes up 10% again.
Yeah.
You make $11,000. Mine goes up 7% of $535,000. Yeah. No chance I'm going to do that in my head. But yeah. you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying.
It can compound it's a really good quicker, strategy too, right? Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's comes with risk.
Yeah.
That we can discuss now. That we're going through pros and cons, but that's the main pro, right?
Yeah.
Another pro in Australia, real estate is extremely safe if you are buying land, because yes. land appreciation in Australia is very reliable.
Yes.
And
this is your opinion based off
opinion,
the research
of course.
You've done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
So that's another pro. Rent, obviously. So you get rent each week. Rather than dividends from shares, which come in either quarterly or every 6 months.
Yes, yeah.
But the biggest con, I guess, is repayment of debt.
Yes.
For instance.
And the interest that is encumbered
correct.
Because of the debt. Like that's what gets me because like if I think about, if I don't know if you've ever looked at like your repayments on your car or your home loan or whatever, if you have them, don't try if you can avoid it, having to pay money on your car, that's a good idea. But the amount, particularly when you first get the loan, the amount of interest you're paying is abhorrent. Like just
100%.
And you notice it when you just like, I was thinking about it. Every month I'm basically putting like $3,000 into my house, which means I'm putting $36,000 roughly into that. My home loan does not decrease by $36,000. It decreases by what, like
three?
$5,000, $3,000.
Yeah.
Which means you're just like pissing that stuff in the wind. And this informs partly why I don't do property now, because like I'm still licking my wounds from having consumer debt as well. And like, I just hate the idea of giving the bank any more power than they need.
Yeah. And I totally understand that. Like debt's scary. But I'm a big believer in if you don't take out debt to invest in Australia, you're going to really struggle to retire early if that's what you want to do.
And do you know what? It's really interesting because you said before that strategies change and ways to do it. And like I have spent a lot of time looking up businesses for sale. And this is something that I'm just exploring now. But you can buy a business for like, there was a driving range that was for sale for like $300,000, the business of it, right?
Yeah.
Not the property that it was on, but like you still use that property. Like you'd have to pay rent and everything. And I was like, that feels a lot more feasible in today's like economy to like pay that kind of money rather than spending like heaps on a house. And then like, you know, I'm quite certain that eventually I will take on debt.
Yeah.
In order to run a business or whatever. But
yeah, the thing that always gets me with property, because I was the same when I decided to buy my investment property at the end of the last year, I was having serious doubts. Like there's this thing called buyer's remorse, and it's what people tend to get when they have a large expense.
Yeah.
I was always worried. I'm like, oh my God, I'm taking out so much debt. My interest rate's now 6.5%.
Yeah.
So I'm taking a $500,000 mortgage and paying 6% interest on that. So that's 30 grand of interest a year, right? So scary as, right?
Yeah.
However, what always gets me is, let's say property does go up 7% a year on average. Yeah. That means the property will double in 10 years.
Yeah.
And I know you had this, you said this saying earlier, but let's just assume that past performance is an indicator of future performance.
And say it does Warren double. Buffett is just doubled over in pain.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. But, okay, let's just assume for this example, right? So you buy a $500,000 property.
Yeah.
In 10 years' time, it's worth $1 million.
Yes.
What also goes up,
compounding,
is your rent.
Yeah.
So let's assume that $500,000 property is getting you $500 a week in rent, which is pretty typical in Australia for a $500,000 property, right?
How much is it getting you a week?
$500 a week.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Sorry, did I say month?
No, I don't think you did. I just wasn't listening.
I meant a week, sorry. So let's say it's 500. It lags slightly.
Yeah.
But as the value of the property goes up, typically the rent will eventually catch up to it. So if in 10 years my property's worth $1 million, my rent should also be $1,000 a week.
Yeah.
So
a weekly rental yield, is it safe to assume it's 1%?
No, that ends up being 5.2%. And the reason why I say that is because you've got to times that rent by 52.
Oh, okay.
To get 52 weeks in the year.
Yeah.
So if it's $500 a week, that's $26,000 a year.
Yeah.
Divide your $26,000 into your $500,000 cost.
Yeah.
And that'll be roughly 5.2%.
I'm so interested to find out like how many listeners we're going to get to this podcast. Yeah. And I don't mean that in a, like, because I'm
Yeah, I don't want to get too technical, right? But what I'm trying to say is the value's doubled, but also your rent's doubled.
Yeah.
Yes, my interest might still be $30,000 in 10 years' time. However, because I'm getting $1,000 a week, I'm getting $52,000 in rent in 10 years' time.
And do you know what? It's so important for like people listening to this, like talk about this stuff with your friends.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, money is often a taboo subject, but it shouldn't be. And don't be a wanker. Don't be like trying to, don't big note yourself and say like how much you got and all that kind of stuff just to try and show off. It's not about that, because like I'm feeling myself, like my opinions change and there's information like I hadn't ever considered very stupidly that rent increases, like the rental yield, the amount of rent that you get was going to increase as well as the house. Do you know what I mean? Like it makes it a more palatable, like the fear more palatable if you're going to get involved in that. So, I mean, it's a strong point for actually talking about these things.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And you're right. Don't big note yourself and say, oh, I make so much money off my investments, blah, blah, blah. It's just about discussing your thoughts on investments and your thoughts on how you're cutting costs and things like that, that are valuable, because then you might teach someone something and they'll teach you something.
Yeah. And so do you know what, like is now bouncing around in my head that I feel will be a question that's probably even more valuable than the shit we've just been chatting. How do you talk to Bree about this stuff?
Yeah. Very, very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
Bree's definitely not into it at all.
I know.
And I'm super lucky because she trusts me. She sees the amount of research I'm doing.
Yeah.
She sees the probably thousands of hours of podcasts and ebooks that I've listened to and the books that I'm reading in bed.
Yeah.
So she understands that I'm educated in it. So she has that trust. But I do explain every decision we're making and why. And I do not get her permission, but run it by her before I do anything.
Yeah.
So, and like in the investment property, I explained pros and cons. We went through it all.
Yeah.
And we made that decision together to do that.
Yes.
Because you're right, it's a cost.
Yeah, and I do believe like in a relationship, right, like, you know, if one person, like also the same thing is like Bree in your relationship is like a midwife and you're an engineer. So if I need somebody to do some math, I'm probably going to ask you. But if I need someone to deliver a baby, I'm going to ask your wife.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, I'm sure you'd agree with that. So like everybody like in a relationship brings strengths, and like I think it's a good thing, you know, to take, let someone take the lead if they do it. It's just, I sort of find like one frustration that Renee's got with me, one of many, but I think sometimes she feels in order to do this stuff, like you've got to stop bullshit consumer purchasing.
Yes.
So like I just had my birthday and no, you say happy birthday. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
John.
Thanks, mate. and I didn't want any presents.
Yeah,
there's other reasons why I don't want presents. I've spoken about presents before; they're bullshit.
Yeah,
but there's nothing that I wanted, and I actually have like a investment thing set up for Lawson for what, like for his high school, what I was talking about before.
Yeah,
and I said like if people want to like do something for me, put money in there, and like that, it's a weird thing, but it has had like a mixed reception because somebody actually said like, "Oh, well, that's not for me," and I wanted to be like, "It fucking is." Right.
Yeah.
If it's 100% for me because it's buying my time back. Do you know what
exactly.
I mean? In order to do that. But anyways, I've sort of digressed. But that was like an interesting enough thing because like my wife disregarded my want and decided to buy a gift for me anyway.
Oh, of course she did. You were never not going to get gifts. Come on.
I know. Yeah. And I'm thankful for it. But you know, at the same rate too, like I think sometimes she doesn't like that. You know, I say like, you know, we shouldn't just be spending money left, right, and center. Because even the small things, I hate, you know, for Gen Zers at the moment, the big thing is like, can they afford a house or whatever?
Yeah.
And like, then you'll have like some classic boomer just like, oh, you just can't have avocado.
I had three jobs.
Yeah, I had three jobs and I bought my first house for $28. anyways, it's... One of the things that I said, like, you don't have avocado toast and don't eat out. And, like, this is bouncing around my head quite a bit. That's the one thing I do still do. I eat out a lot.
Yeah,
but that's what my, like, play money's for.
Exactly.
What I don't do is buy horse shit all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the amount of stupid purchases I made. I cleaned my shed out during the week. And as I was cleaning this out, I was like, man, do you want to know something, what I bought?
Mm.
I bought a tube notcher. Do you know what that is?
Do I want to know?
That is a device that you use to cut a notch out of a tubular piece of steel.
Oh, yeah,
so that you can make two tubular pieces together and weld them together.
Yeah.
And I think I paid like $90 for it or something. It was just like, it was like some like eBay special Chinese import thing. And I had plans to use it. It wasn't just like a random purchase.
Yeah.
But I was looking, I was like, what the fuck did I buy that for? Like, what a monumental waste of money because I haven't used it. Like, it's not actually a relevant tool. Like, most tools I reckon you should buy if you're going to do a project or whatever.
Oh, 100%.
And but a like, tube notcher, John, shit.
Yeah,
I had two welders. I sold one of them. Anyways, I'm going down
the line. No one ever does this and I've never done this. But if you are going to buy something like that for $90, put it into a compound interest calculator and see what it's worth. In the share market, hitting 12% a year in 50 years' time, you'll be like, oh, maybe I won't spend that $90.
So I actually did that recently in relation to the me wanting money going into the share portfolio, not presents. And my parents put a bit of, they're like, oh, we'll give you some money. So they gave me like $100 and they put $100 into the account for that one. And so I was like, I'll feed back to them and let them know what it's worth. And if you just put that $100 plainly at 12% in 10 years, it'll be worth $330.
Yeah, how good. Right?
But if you put it like put $100 in every year and the parameters are the same to 12% or whatever, like it becomes thousands of dollars.
Mm.
And you don't think of it like that. I was like, oh, that's pretty good though. You put in 1,000, becomes 3,000 and something, 3,600 or whatever it
definitely.
Is.
Yeah, definitely. All right, mate. I think we've... talk this to death now, but look, we are not experts, so I think we need to point our listeners in the right direction. So let's discuss some places they can go if they're interested in shares.
All right, so get a pen, even if you're driving. dig around, yeah. close your eyes, and think where you've put a pen in the car.
So I'll start with some podcasts. I reckon in Australia, the number one podcast for shares and the strategy that you and me tend to use is Equity Mates. Yep. So they've been around for a few years now, and they've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of podcasts. So it can get a bit overwhelming, but they've got a playlist called Get Started Investing.
Yeah.
And it's super good if you have no idea.
Do you know what? I don't even listen to them, but I should get into them.
They're really good. Really good. They've also got a book. I don't know what it's called, but I'm sure it's also a pretty good read or listen.
Yeah. Nice.
Yep. Next one. So another podcast. It's called Invested. It's by Phil Town and his daughter, Danielle Town. And Town's essentially a fund manager in the US, and they're all about value investing. And value investing's, well, they're not really about value investing. They're about...
They have a strategy.
Exactly. That's they've got a strategy that they use that Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger use, right? Yes. Who are two of the most successful investors ever.
Yeah, well, Warren Buffett's worth like $92 billion or something
crazy
like that.
Crazy amount. Yep. So they're also very good. Let you go, mate.
Yeah. So we also have, if you want to sort of get into property, and the irony of me reading this out because I don't listen to this one yet, but I have listened to podcasts from one of the speakers in it, but The Property Couch, which is your favorite one. If I had a dollar for every time you said The Property Couch, I don't think I'd need to invest. We wouldn't have to do this podcast. We could just play tennis every Monday like we're supposed to be.
It is probably the most valuable podcast ever made.
He is
honestly
good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Bryce Holdaway and Ben Kingsley there.
Yeah, Bryce Holdaway.
Bryce Holdaway was on Location, Location, Location Australia. And he's a buyer's agent.
Yeah.
And then Ben Kingsley runs their business, and he was a mortgage broker, but he's now a qualified property investment advisor. And honestly, the first 20 to 100 episodes that they have are just like so foundational for residential real estate. So highly recommend.
Yeah, and then we've got the Aussie Firebug as well, which I think I've mentioned before, but it's like this is actually one of my favorite ones. The Aussie Firebug, so the FIRE movement, FIRE stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. And everybody always focuses on the retire early because they go like, oh, but I don't want to retire and all that kind of stuff. That's not what it's about. It's about essentially having enough in investments that your expenses are covered. So that if you don't want to work, or rather, let me rephrase. It's not that if you don't want to work, that you can follow whatever passion project you want.
Yeah, okay? Correct.
And anyhow, so that particular podcast gets a lot of people on, that Cameron Murray economist, he was on that. There are people that talk about all sorts of bits and bobs and different methods of, you know, sort of furthering your position, whether you want to be in business or all that kind of stuff. It's great. Awesome podcast. What else we got? Oh, and then the other thing too, so I'm like big into books. It's funny, I said like a couple of these podcasts I don't listen to, but like there are some really good books to like open your eyes. Dundo Investor by Monish Pabrai, who's a fund manager similar to Warren Buffett as well. That is an incredible book. Then there's another one called The Little Book That Beats the Market. And there's like the reissue is like The Little Book That Still Beats the Market by a guy called Joel Greenblatt.
Yeah.
And get these things on Spotify. So good. So good. I'll put links to all of them. Yeah, Spotify Platinum, it's free or whatever the top tier
Even
Spotify
not
thing is.
In Premium, it's free, mate.
Why do I call it Platinum?
Is it Premium? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably Spotify Platinum. and then there's Rule One Investing.
Yep. So that's by Phil Town, who's... we've already mentioned earlier.
And he's got a website on that too.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Really, really good. And then I've just also put down Money Smarts and The Armchair Guide to Property Investing. So that's two books written by
The Property Couch guys.
So also a very good resource there. Just quickly on Monish Pabrai.
Yeah.
He spent $1 million on a Berkshire Hathaway share, so that's just a business in the US, in order to have lunch with Warren Buffett for one hour. Crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. That's a lot of money. But because Monish Pabrai's got a few lectures and stuff up online, like he did a Google lecture and stuff like that. which is endlessly fascinating. I actually really like that guy. I think, you know, he's a very interesting person. He's very reasonable.
Yeah.
And the way he looks at businesses and stuff. But like, once again, there's such a rabbit hole you can get into and you can really nerd out and this kind of stuff. And yeah. it's super interesting. It's like, you know, it's just a different world.
Yeah. 100%.
But yeah, so, you know, with all of that chat, if we still have you, maybe we should quickly talk about dad hacks.
Let's do it. Best part of the episode.
Yeah. Although it was pretty shit house today.
Yeah, there's not much going on in your notes here, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, so in my notes, I said, go see a tax professional. And that's my dad hack. As if that's a fucking dad hack, that's what you should do anyways. But look, I mean, my point behind actually writing this is that you don't know what you don't know, right? And like ignorance, contrary to popular belief, isn't always bliss. A lot of people spend a lot of time ignoring their financial like position and all that kind of stuff, and it ends up being bad for them. And the thing is too, like tax is another side of things. Like when you start doing these things, you end up essentially making more money, like, you know, all things going well. So you need to understand what the tax implications are around this. And like, for me, one of the biggest things at the moment is like, I'm trying to free myself up with a tax structure that allows me to be a bit more entrepreneurial. So starting businesses and having my assets protected. So if I start a business that, I don't know, should we call it, I don't know, John's Cleaning Supplies, and then John's Cleaning Supplies ends up being carcinogenic and everyone dies because of it, and then I know that my house is protected when, you know, they rightly come for their life, you know, for the money, but I need to know that Renee will still have a house to live in and all that kind of stuff.
Even for like, sorry to interrupt, even no, for like right. things like just your tax return, right? I've always done my own tax return
until
this year, and like, as you said, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I'd never saw an accountant because I was like, why would I pay them when I can just do it myself? However, they can actually save you money.
Yes.
And I love the saying, find the who, not the how. So find the expert to do the work for you instead of spending all these hours doing it yourself.
Yeah. And do you know what? Like, that actually flies in the face of like philosophically of how I've lived my life. Like, I don't think I've ever really had, except for the stuff I legally had to, I've never had a tradie in the house. I've just done everything myself if I can handle it. Because you know, you upskill yourself.
Yeah, and you learn.
You're able to do stuff. And there's a certain value to that too. But like, there's only so much time you have. And when time becomes the thing that's limiting you and you've got a kid, and like before I had kids, I'd spend hours in the shed. That's part of the reason I rebuilt that car and all that kind of stuff. But I just sold it because I was like, I don't have the time to do that because I barely see my kid as it is now because I'm always podcasting.
And I don't have the time to learn all tax law.
But also like, I think you need to be an expert in that field too. Like, there are thousands and thousands of laws out there.
Yeah. Crazy. You know,
business laws, tax laws, corporate laws.
Oh yeah.
No peeing in public laws.
Hate that one.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, Lord, get rid of it. All right, mate. Well, I thought I would do a dad hack that's not finance related because I'm sure we've lost plenty of people by now. But mine is involve your kid in your exercise regime.
Oh, big time.
And the reason why I say this is because we are time poor professionals and dads. And exercise is usually the thing that you put last on your to-do list for the day, right?
Yeah.
And it's the first thing that gets pushed aside when something doesn't go right in the afternoon during bedtime for the kids and whatnot.
Yeah.
However, it shouldn't be put last. It's very important to look after your health, right?
Yeah.
So my advice is two birds with one stone. Involve your kids in your exercise. So go for a bike ride. Even if you're a runner or you like going to the gym, if that can't happen, go for a bike ride with your kid.
Yes.
Like Maeve loves being outdoors. Yes. And we have a little seat on the bike with her. So we always go for like little bike rides and stuff.
Yeah.
Or even just go for a walk with them, go to the park, just anything that involves being active.
Yeah.
And it might not be the exercise you want.
Yeah.
You might not have made it to the gym. You might not have made it for your bloody 10K run.
Yeah.
But at least you got out and you did something.
Yeah, that's it. You keep the ball rolling.
Exactly. And
I really feel like that's a really good example to set for your kids.
Oh, yeah.
And to like wrap everything up quite nicely, there's two things in life that affect you whether you pay attention to them or not, and that is health and money.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love
Anyways.
It.
with that.
Let's end it on that note, eh?
I'll see you next time.
Love it. Gotcha.
Bye.